I want to explain the history of this book for the story of author, Ashiva Gosar. I think if you read this book, you can understand. Mainly I want to concentrate on the teaching of this book. This teaching is very interesting. kind of the teaching of Buddha between, now based on the teaching of emptiness and also teaching of the function of human psychology. mainly in Buddhist history, two the lines of teaching. One is the teaching of emptiness mentioned by Nagarjuna. After that, in Buddhist history, the Buddhist teaching based on Buddhist psychology, the Buddhist psychology has been developed. That is Abhidhamma Kosha. And the mere consciousness. But this book is kind of overall picture of a teaching, including the teaching of emptiness and also Buddhist teaching in terms of Buddhist psychology. So very interesting book. So very systematic. Title is The Waking of Faith. But literally, I think I would like to say the treatise on awakening Mahayana faith. Treaty on awakening Mahayana faith. Mahayana means Maha is great. Yana is a vehicle. In this book, Mahayana is described the essence of what is now here, or ultimate nature of what is here now. Two meaning. One is what is the ultimate nature of what is here now, and also second meaning is embracing. So Maha means essence or the ultimate nature of what is here now. That Maha is to embrace all sentient beings. That is
meaning of Maha.
And this Maha is the function of the Maha is a kind of vehicle to carry all sentient beings. That's why we say vehicle. The Mahayana means a vehicle, So. So all sentient beings are carried away, carried on. So that is a Mahayana. And in this book, look at this paper, I would like to say a structure of this book, excuse me, I have to say more Mahayana faith. Awakening of faith, so this book is teaching of Buddhist faith, but usual Hinayana Buddhist faith, but Mahayana Buddhist faith. So faith is Mahayana is the kind of essence of Buddhist faith, or object of faith, we believe in. So Mahayana is object of faith, because Maha means essence of being, or ultimate nature of what is here and now. So that is a really at the object of our faith. But it is very pure, because the Maha is essence of a being which embraces all sentient beings and carry them. So it is very pure functions, That's why the object of faith is very, something very pure, beyond human control, human speculation, completely pure and clean. That's why the person who wants to believe in that one, believe in this faith, believe in that object, essence of being, then naturally person become very pure. Because if you believe in, or if you think of this pure essence of being, very naturally, you must be pure and clean. Even though you think, even for a moment, you think so, you become very clean and pure. So that's why, if you believe this essence of being, you become pure. So, in Buddhism says, faith is pure and clean. Pureness and cleanness. Purity and cleanness. This is meaning of faith. So we should awaken this have faith. Okay. How? That's why here is a set. He explained how we should awaken this boy's faith. This is at this part. Okay. So first, let's see this structure of this book. This is very common structure of the which the Buddhist treatise follows. First, introduction and main subject and conclusion. 3 points. That is, introduction is invocation. This is very common structure. The treatise follows. Okay? Buddhist treatise follows. Always there is an invocation. And main subject, this is the main subject, and also this is a very important teaching, important point this book really teaches us. So main subject consists of 5 parts. Part 1, the reason for writing. Reason for writing. So why this Ashoka Ghosha want to write this book? So 8 reasons there. Okay? 8 reasons is mentioned. Part 2, outline. So what mind is 2 aspects, it's 3 characteristics. That outlines is what mind it's 2 aspects, it's 3 characteristics. Already that out the outline is the explanation of the interpretation or part 4, part 5. Okay? Say outline. So the part 3, part 4, part 5 explains anyway about one mind is 2 aspects and it's 3 characteristics. What mind means? What mind means the truth. Truth. A truth means one mind, only one mind. Mind only. Human beings, trees, birds, winters, anyway. All existence, all beings are based on the same and one ground. We call one mind. So one mind and two aspects. That is 2 aspects means in the part 3 there are Chapter 1, Chapter 2, Chapter 3. In the Chapter 1, Chapter 2, there are revelation of the true meaning, causation of the evil attachment. And also next is the under revelation of the true meaning, that is the mind in terms of the truth, the mind in terms of phenomena. 2 aspects means the mind in terms of the truth, the mind in terms of phenomena. So one mind can be seen in terms of 2 aspects. Okay? The truth and also arising and ceasing of being. All sentient beings is born and disappear. That is birth and death. So from 2 aspects, one mind is seen. So that is its 2 aspects. It's 3 characteristics. 3 characteristics means one is essence, second is attributes and functioning. So all sentient beings are based on three characteristics. One is essence, second is attribute, and third is function. Essence is kind of discipline. So all sentient beings, if all sentient beings exist in this world, there is a reason why it exists. So there are discipline. Nothing exists. Random with no reason. Nothing. So there is, you know, the always reason why it exists. Even though evil or devils, right or wrong, and, even though wind always break and broken and destroying the trees or house, even the tornado what destroys human beings and house, nature, still it has still reason why it exists. Okay? There is a discipline. So from this point, even a tornado is entitled to live in this world. You can't destroy it. So that is a discipline, and also this the all sentient being, if all sentient being exists in this world, it has always attribute. Attribute. Attribute means form. It has always form, a mark, and also the marks, form, what people can see through six senses. That is attribute and also the function. So if all sentient beings has a form and marks, they always function. They always function in many ways. That is the three characteristics. Okay.
What is the discipline? Under
essence.
Essence.
That is the essence. Three characteristics are essence, attribute, and functions.
Where did you get discipline?
This discipline means reason why. Reason for the existence. And the one mind, these two aspects, these three characteristics, in a sense, are described about the Maha, in this case, Maha. Mahayana, Mahayana. What is Maha? In this book, Maha is described by one mind, its two aspects, and its three characteristics. And also in the part four, there are four faiths and five practices and extended skillfulness, something like this. That is meaning of Maha. Okay, revelation of the truth and the mind and the terms of the truth of the next line. The two kinds of their truths, emptiness, non-emptiness, So mind, in terms of the truth, is described from three points, two kinds of the truth, emptiness or non-emptiness. Well, I don't want to explain gradually to understand this briefly. Briefly, I want to explain this one. Chapter 1, revelation of the true meaning. So very naturally, we know outline, the, you know, or the outline what this book mentions. So, truths how do what is the one mind? So here's the revelation of true meaning under this. This book mentions the mind in terms of the two truths, the mind in terms of phenomena. Chapter 2, causation of evil attachment. The next says, correction of two attachments to a person and dharma. Causation of evil attachment. So if you understand the truth, the mind in terms of the truth, the mind in terms of phenomena, there is still some problem that is attachment to a person and dharma. Okay, this is a strong attachment we have. So we have to correct this one. Okay. So that is this chapter, chapter 2, causation of evil attachment. Chapter 3, analysis of the types of aspirations for enlightenment. So, chapter 3, how we practice the analysis of the types of aspirations. This is all aspirations for enlightenment. So we should know the what enlightenment is, the how to accomplish the, anyway, how to accomplish, how to attain enlightenment. This is analysis of the types of aspiration for enlightenment, chapter 3. Part 4, on faith. So interpretation is most important in this book. So very concretely, it explains what meaning of the truth and how to practice, what is the obstacles for us in order to reach the truth. And part four is the practice for determined class of people, these who has non-backsliding faith, not backsliding faith, very strong faith. For those people, how we practice. Okay? But on the other end, there are people who have backsliding faith. Undetermined class of the people. So for those people, how we practice, how we awaken Mahayana faith. That is part 4. And part 5, we try to encourage all sentient beings to reach Buddha's way. How? So there is an encouragement of the practice and benefit. This is Buddha's way. Essence of beings is very pure and well, they clean. So if you know, for a moment, let's think of it. Think of it. In other words, usually we say, let's live in a positive way. We say very often, we say so. And Buddha is very valuable and helpful for us. So let's to have access to the Buddha's teaching as best as we can, as much as possible. We try something like this. So that is encouragement. So how we awaken Buddhist Mahayana. Buddhist Mahayana faith. That is chapter 5. Conclusion is the verse of Parinama. Parinama is education. education means, Parinama means echo in Japanese. Echo means a term. A merits of your practice to another. If you do something, then naturally you can get result. But that result is not something you should hold on by yourself. You should share it with the people. So as best as we can, we should do something good every day. Because if you do something good, that goodness guides you to have cross success to the Buddhist way instead of doing something wrong. If you do something wrong, that activity keeps you away from, you know, the essence of being or ultimate nature of being. They not to keep away, slip off, going far from that. That's why, as best as we can, we should do something good. If we do something good, then naturally you can have access. You can find a way to have access to the Buddha way. So, that is echo, dedication, parinama. We say parinama. So in Buddhism, parinama is very beautiful thought, human thought. We do something good and then we can get result, but that result should be shared with all sentient beings. So very naturally there is practice of egolessness. If you do something good, they not just people try to hold on. But let it go. Enlightenment, so next. You can get enlightenment, but next, let it go. Practicing letting go is very difficult for us because we want to hold on. So if you, through the practice zazen, if you have something, if you experience something wonderful, you really want to keep it for long, but you can't do it. So very naturally, rhythm of a human life show you practicing letting go. But you don't do it. That's why actually you try to hold it. But Nature of the beings let you learn how to let it go. That's why human beings, in a sense, create lots of egos and attachment to it. To you, to the teaching, to the object. That is a Dharma and attachment to the Dharma and a person. So, verse of Parinama. This is a conclusion. And also, the introduction, invocation, whatever kind of books is written, The author has a certain purpose why, particularly, the author tried to write something on the basis of full devotion to the triple treasure. So that is invocation. The invocation is written in the strong devotion toward the triple treasure. That is the invocation. Okay. Do you have a question?
Just when you say that this book has to do with awakening Mahayana faith as opposed to Hinayana.
It says Hinayana, but Maha doesn't mean great, opposed to small.
No.
No. I don't mean this. But Mahayana is term Mahayana is used very naturally opposed to Hinayana. So Mahayana is the understanding Buddhist way in a broad perspective. But in this case, Maha doesn't mean the term the Maha, the great, opposed to small.
Does Hinayana mean just like cultivating one's own sort of psychological state?
Yes, that is a very common study. Yes.
What you're saying is that there are different practices for those with non-backsliding faith and those with backsliding faith. How do you know if you have backsliding faith or non-backsliding faith?
I think you can know pretty well in your everyday life. In the spiritual life, you cannot always stay in the strong spiritual faith. Even though you believe that you have a strong spiritual faith, still within the faith, you can see the up and downs life. Sometimes you don't want, sometimes you want, sometimes you have a doubt. You become very skeptical. Apparently you do the same strongly you believe Buddhism, but still there is skeptical doubt. So doubt and skepticism is kind of this is, anyway, kind of backsliding your faith. So more or less, we have this kind of backsliding faith. So in order to have not backsliding faith, we have to practice for a long time anyway. But basically, we are already living in the realm of unbacksliding faith because we are already embraced by essence of existence, being. Even though you realize or you don't realize, you are embraced by the universe. So from this point, wherever you may go, you are always at the stage of not but sweating faith. It's already. But we don't see it. That's a problem for us. That's why we have to notice, we have to realize it, and we have to practice it.
Why are there different kinds of practices?
Mm-hmm.
Why are there different kinds of practices then if everybody is both backsliding and non-backsliding? Why do they say there are different kinds of practices?
Because everyone has such different kinds of lifestyle. I think that it's basically there all sentient beings live in the same ground. From this point, all sentient beings becomes equal. But each one is different. Tree is different, bird is different, so they are not human beings, many kinds of human beings there. But through the different characters and characteristics, different personalities, different lifestyles, the form of beings, we have to realize the same and one ground. So called faith. Essence of universe. We have to find it. That's why there are many, many practices.
Says faith, does that mean faith in Dharma? Or what is it faith in?
Yeah, we can say Dharma. Because Dharma is the essence of beings, three meanings. Essence of beings and phenomena. He loves to teach you. That is called Dharma. So what we should believe in, generally speaking, we say Dharma, we can believe Dhamma. So we can believe in the essence of beings as a Dhamma. We can believe in the phenomenal world as a Dhamma. We can believe in the Dhamma as a phenomenal world. Because phenomenal world is not something different from essence of existence. That's why we believe the Dhamma as the essence of beings and as essence of the phenomenal world, and also we believe in teaching. That is belief. Right, in this book, the faith is described in more detail. Let's read the invocations, page 23. I take refuge in the Buddha, the greatly compassionate one, the savior of the world, omnipotent, omnipresent, omniscient, of most excellent deeds in all the 10 directions, and in the Dhamma, the manifestation of his essence, the reality, the sea of Sakyas, the boundless storehouse of excellencies, and in the Sangha, who members truly devote themselves to the practice. May all sentient beings be made to discard their doubts, to cast aside their evil attachment, and to give rise to the correct faith in the Mahayana, that the lineage of the Buddhas may not be broken off. The lineage of the Buddhas means that the literary seed of the Buddha. Seed of the Buddha. We try to maintain, we try to continue the seed of the Buddha, means the seed of the universal life, universal life. Everything has the universal life, okay?
Seed.
A seed. S-E-E-D. Seed. But in this, the translation here says lineage of the Buddha. I take refuge first. That's why in the invocation, we take refuge in the Buddha. Triple trigger. Buddha, Dhamma, Sangha here. Okay. So I take refuge in the Buddha. Take refuge, is called Namo, Nama or Namo, which means Kimyo, means Ki is return, Myo means life. So take refuge in the Buddha is return to the Buddha with life. In other words, you have to devote yourself to return to essence of existence, to the Buddha, with life. So you have to offer your life. You offer your life to Buddha. That is big. Huge devotion, not only thinking, okay? So you cannot offer yourself, offer your life to the Buddha in terms of the heuristic sense. You cannot do it. So you need to take enormous effort, enormous compassion. You should offer your life. Something more than to risk your life. Kind of a risky life, but the risky life is very egoistic. But in this, to take refuge in the Buddha is kind of a risk in your life, but very elegant. Okay. Elegant behavior must be based on so I take refuge in the Buddha. That is a kimyo, take refuge. In English we say take refuge, but in Sanskrit we say namo. Namo is translated as kimyo in Japanese, return to the Buddha with life, with your life. Do you understand? Full devotion to the Buddha. The gratefully compassionate one, so what is a Buddha? The gratefully compassionate one, very compassionate, because compassion comes from the bottom of existence. When you touch the core of existence, very natural compassion comes up. I always say, just like if your water pipe touches the water vein, very natural water comes up. Just like this. So if you understand very deeply the human world, very natural compassion comes up. Whatever you may be, compassion is there. So great compassion, this is a Buddha. Okay? The Buddha is to have this compassion and also to awaken this compassion, well, to let others, to awaken this compassion. So that is called Buddha. Buddha let oneself, Buddha awaken himself. To have a awakening, to have a Buddha, and to compassion, and simultaneously, to let others awaken compassion. So that greatly compassionate one, the savior of the world. So if you have this great compassion, very naturally, you can help all sentient beings. So we say savior. Savior of the world, omnipotent. The great compassionate one, the savior of the world. Now, can I say in the Chinese it says supreme karma instead of a great compassionate one, the savior of the world? The original it says supreme karma, supreme activity. Supreme activities. Because Buddha's, that is Buddha's intention or Buddha's will. Buddha's will is always something supreme. Always moving toward essence of existence based on the basis of compassion. So Buddha's intention or will let him do something good always, under all circumstances. That is greatly compassionate one, savior of the world. At that time, you become a great Buddha who helps all sentient beings. Omnipotent, I don't know how to say. Omnipotent means Buddha's body. Omnipotent, omnipresent. Omniscient. Oh, excuse me. Let me say. Greatly compassionate one, the savior of the world. Omnipotent, omnipresent, omniscient of most excellent deeds in all the ten directions. All the, yes, yes, most excellent deeds or activity and nations. Let me say, Buddha means, excuse me, I said a little bit something wrong. I didn't notice the most excellent deeds in all the ten directions. Buddha's activity is always excellent or supreme. In all the ten directions means in the implication of the space. But not only the space, but also time process. Including time and space, Buddha is always doing something good for all sentient beings. So in all ten directions, for all sentient beings who exist in space, in time. That is called in ten directions. So Buddha is most excellent deeds. Buddha has most excellent deeds for all sentient beings. Okay? For all sentient beings. And next, what is most excellent deeds for all sentient beings? That is a great compassionate one. He is great compassionate. That's why his the deeds are very excellent. Okay, so that one by one it says the great compassionate one. Buddha is his deeds are very compassionate, and also he is helping all sentient beings, the human world. That's why savior of the world. That is his deed. And also omnipotent, omnipresent. Omnipotent means Buddha's body. Buddha's body is always functioning freely, okay? Helping. According to the characteristic of the person, according to the circumstances, anyway, Buddha helps. So that is omnipotent. Buddha's body is watching freely, functioning freely. That is omnipotent, omnipresent, and also says omniscient. Okay? So omnipotent, omnipresent, omniscient means the implication of how Buddha's body is functioning, okay? Completely free. Okay. And also, that is a Buddha, so that's why we take refuge in the Buddha. Okay? In the Buddha. We are Buddha already. Okay? That's why we try to do as a Buddha. We try to behave as a Buddha. We are already Buddha. That's what we have to do. We have to act as a Buddha. If you are not Buddha, it's not necessary to practice. We are Buddha, that's why we have to act as a Buddha. If you are not Buddha, you cannot act as a Buddha. And next we take refuge in the Dhamma. Okay? Dhamma is the manifestation of its essence. That is the essence of being. That is the Buddha's Dhamma. So the Buddha's Dhamma. And the reality, essence of beings is, in a sense, called the reality. Reality. Real reality, we can say. So reality you live in is really essence of being. So you don't know, you can't touch it. You can't touch, pin down what reality is, what the reality, what the place you live in. It's vast. The more you research, the more you don't know. It's very big, vast. That is reality. Okay? So, manifestation, Dhamma is manifestation of his essence. Essence of beings, or sometimes it is called reality. Okay? What is this? This is kind of a sea of suchness. Suchness is truth. Okay? Or vastness of existence. So, reality, or essence of beings, is really vast as sea, And also the boundless storehouse, of excellencies, are wonderful things in it. So that's why we have to practice patience. Under all circumstances, unfavorable or favorable conditions, anyway, we have to practice patience, and we have to make effort. We have to take care of with the discipline, we have to practice meditation and wisdom. Meditation means tranquilization, and wisdom is clear observation, in the sense sometimes vipassana. Meditation is called shamatha. Shamatha is anyway one pointedness. So very naturally, your mind, your body becomes tranquilized. So meditation is implication of practice of tranquilization, and wisdom is clear observation by what you can see, essence of human life. With going up and down. Okay? So, core of existence, core of human world, samsaric world, we can see it by wisdom. Okay? So, that's a clear observation. Vipassana. So, very naturally, we have a boundless storehouse of excellency. That is, anyway, Dhamma. That's why, whatever happens, anyway, let's learn the Dhamma. You believe in the Dhamma. You devote yourself to the Dhamma constantly. This is great encouragement. Next, in the Sangha, whose members are truly devoid themselves to the practice. Even though they are Buddha and Dhamma, We need a sangha whose members, okay, who are interested in practicing Buddha and Dhamma. Okay. We need the human beings who lives now, today. Okay. Otherwise, we cannot transmit, we cannot convey Buddha and Dhamma to the next generation. So that is Sangha truly devote themselves to the practice. So Sangha, members of the Buddha, members of the Buddhism, is a person who devote himself to the practice, okay? On the basis of Buddha's teaching. So there are three always the author has a great vow why he has to write this anyway book. He has a very profound vow of devoting himself to Buddha Dhamma Sangha. This is very important for this author. So he devotes himself with his life to write this book. To write this book means to help all sentient beings, not help only human intellect, but helping human intellect and human emotion and also human will. Okay? Intellect, emotion, will. And then final goal is to be free from human intellect, human emotion, human will. That is the vow. Okay? Vow. To take refuge to Buddha. So belief, Buddhist belief is to believe anyway Dharma. What do you mean to believe in Dharma? To believe in Dharma is to take refuge in the triple treasure, Buddha, Dharma, Sangha. What is a Buddha? Buddha is a person who is constantly have something good, helping. Even though his just presence is very helpful. So that is Buddha, and historically, Buddha is Gautama Siddhartha, Shakyamuni Buddha, who anyway existed in the human history. That's why we believe, we trust this person. And that this person tells us, all sentient beings, all of you, are Buddha. Exactly in the same as Buddha Shakyamuni. He proved this 2500 years ago. So, we trust, we believe in this historical person, Shakyamuni Buddha, and simultaneously, next, we believe in his teaching, so called the Atma. So if you believe in the Dharma, then naturally there is a practice that is we take refuge in the Buddha, and we exist in this human world as a human being. But simultaneously something more than a human being, that is holiness, something like that. But it's not good enough because we have to believe in his teaching, okay? The teaching of his life. Okay? That is a teaching Dhamma. Next, we have to devote ourselves to the sun, people who are always practicing the teaching and believing in the Buddha, this is the sun. Sun, we take refuge in the people who exist and practice Buddha, Buddhas, and Buddha's teaching. So that is content, quality of believing in Dhamma. So that's why triple treasure are very important. So Buddhist faith is not to believe in something divine or holiness. We have to believe in holiness and also to his teaching and also the people who practice Buddha and holiness and also his teaching. So they complete, they're vast belief. Buddhist faith is very vast. And Buddhist faith is very grounded in human life because you have to believe being human beings who practice, okay? Who practice Buddha ways, Buddha's teaching, anyway. So that is a sign. That's why sangha is important. Okay? May all sentient beings be made to discard their doubts, to cast aside their evil attachment, and to give rise to the correct faith in the Mahayana, that the lineage of the Buddhas may not be broken off. So, may all sentient beings be made to discard their doubt. Okay? One point is, he take a vow to take refuge in triple treasure. That is the reason why he wants to, anyway, let all sentient beings to be made to discard their doubts. Okay? Doubts. Human beings has a lot of doubts toward the essence of existence and also teaching about the essence of the beings. So a lot of doubts. So he want to anyway, but he remove their doubt, to cast aside the evil attachment of the human beings possess their strong evil attachment to the self and to its object, based on attachment consciously or unconsciously. The more you practice and you study Buddhism, the more you realize how strongly your attachment is functioning. So, to cast aside the evil attachment and to give rise to correct faith in the Mahayana. Okay? So, naturally, to give rise to correct faith in the Mahayana. That means to maintain the seeds of the Buddha. Extend the what all sentient beings possess. Okay? Seeds of the Buddha nature, seeds of universal life, may not be broken off. Do you have a question?
That you're already Buddhist, so we need to act like Buddha. If we're already Buddha, then everything we do is the action. Is that right? If we're already Buddha, then everything we do is already the action of Buddha. So what do we need to try to do?
Well, that's why we have to do it. But human beings don't do it. Which is it, huh? Trees, birds, and skies, winters, and walking pretty well at the Buddha. But human beings don't work in that way. You understand? For instance, when you do zazen, that is a simple zazen. Buddha means if you are Buddha, and then you should act as a Buddha in zazen means what? What do you mean this? Zazen and you are not separated. Zazen and you are interconnected, interpenetrated, having a great, wonderful creation there, creative world there, like there, between zazen and you. Very nice creation there. Created life. We don't do it. But look at the trees and winter. Wonderful creation. But we don't do it. We always do zazen, but always complaining and daydreaming and always thinking, chasing after thought. Don't you think so? We are always creating gap between zazen, you, and always. So it's very difficult to create a universal life, a created life. Okay? I say group creation. Okay? Group creation. Sangha, by the sangha, you have to have a group creation, wonderful creation in life. That means each person must communicate very closely. Don't create a gap. Now that is very difficult. If you live like this, then naturally you're fighting, you know, in many ways. Compete always. But look at the trees and birds and winters. They naturally, there is wonderful creation. That's where we are really caught by the beauty of nature. Completely beyond human speaking. So why do you want and do you like nature? We like it. Because we can see it. That's a beautiful thing. We have already. That's why we can see that something beautiful, which nature has. But actually, we don't do it. That's why we are really caught by the nature and dream that nature. At that time, we forget completely how to practice this. So all the dreaming and exciting the beauty of nature. That's why people want to go to nature, in that sense. But we have to practice anyway. We have to live our lives just like a nature. That is called after the Buddha. That is, from day to day, we have to practice anyway. There is no, no end. Day to day, we have to do it.